At every stage of spiritual growth, the greatest ally you have is your body. Does this statement sound surprising? Most of us tend to assume that body and spirit stand at opposite ends of the spectrum. When we feel sensations that are body-centered, such as hunger and thirst, pain and pleasure, or even happiness and sadness, we do not think of these as spiritual experiences. Sensuousness, which encompasses the whole range of physical delight, is often considered low compared to the heights of the soul. But spirituality is sensuous, because a spiritual person is someone who lives fully in the present moment, which means living fully in the body. As you cross from ordinary waking state to higher states of awareness, the body serves as your vehicle. It is not a leaky boat you hope will get you there before you sink it. No, if you are truly in tune with your body, it becomes a trusted teacher and a trusted guide. In order to trust your body as a guide, the first step is to begin to understand it. The human body, and particularly the brain and central nervous system, functions as a two-way antenna monitoring the reality out there, but also reality in here. From moment to moment, each of us receives a steady flow of information that enters through the five senses, gets processed by the mind, and is eventually converted into the body. I see an apple pie, I feel hungry, and I take a slice. In that simple act, I am processing a piece of the world into myself. But you can also reverse the flow. When the body has a need, it tells the mind, which goes and looks for a source of fulfillment. For example, if my kidneys detect a fluid shortage in the bloodstream, they secrete a hormone, a specific chemical messenger, which reaches the brain and is converted into a mental event. I feel thirsty. See this intimate connection? Back and forth these messages go, from body to mind, from mind to body, creating the balanced flow of life. They form a circle of constantly changing desires, a river that is in me, that is me. As spiritual unfoldment becomes conscious, the circle of life acquires another dimension. Your sense of self expands with no end in sight. More and more experience is allowed to come into the never-ending conversation that each of us is conducting with all 50 trillion cells in our body. Unfortunately, our culture has made the mistake of deciding that the human body is a machine, an inert lump of matter that mechanically obeys the mind without any intelligence of its own. This misconception led to a second mistake, the idea that the most spiritual people must be those who renounce the body, denigrate its passions, or at the very least attempt to control its desires. This kind of prejudice against the body runs contrary to the very way that nature fashioned us. Nature balanced mind, body, and spirit as co-creators of our personal reality. You cannot do a single thing, from falling in love to uttering a prayer to metabolizing a molecule of sugar, without affecting everything that you are. The body is the platform which allows any experience to emerge and see the light of day. It is a three-dimensional projection of billions of separate processes going on at any moment, including a process as profound as coming to know the reality of God. It may seem totally self-evident to you that your body is basically a physical entity, but that is really a judgment on your part. Granted, it is a judgment shared by millions of people in the scientific age. For example, science tells us that the heart is a pump, an incredibly reliable machine, but one that is liable to mechanical failure at any moment. But you could just as easily claim that the heart is not this tough bundle of twitching muscles. It is the invisible organizing power that creates a very specific organ out of the same atoms and molecules that are found in every life form. Carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, and nitrogen are the atomic soup that exists in everything alive, from a butterfly wing to a quivering amoeba to a parrot's beak. Inside you, the same building materials could have turned into a stomach or a liver cell instead of a heart cell, except for the unseen intelligence that organized them just this way. That unseen intelligence is yours to command. It flows everywhere in your body, and in fact, every feeling and emotion you have is changing the flow by either a small or a great amount. The whole idea that the heart is a machine is just an image created in our minds, a metaphor we project onto a much richer reality. If you are not spellbound by the metaphor, it is self-evident that the heart is not a pump. It grows, for one thing. At birth, our hearts weighed less than 2 ounces and took more than a decade to reach their final weight of just over a pound. The heart can also alter its own rhythm and stroke volume, self-regulate its timing, sense changes in its environment, and repair damage inflicted by minor heart attacks. What pump does any of that? Then there are feelings associated with my heart. Something in my chest aches with pain, soars with joy, turns hard as flint when it feels distrust, and melts as softly with tenderness as a snowflake in the sun. These are not mere intangibles of emotion. They lead to millions of chemical changes affecting the whole physiology. A depressed person literally has depressed cells. A happy person has happy ones. The difference between the two can be broken down into minute changes of chemical balance, and without these chemicals, you could not be depressed or be happy. You could not have an emotion of any kind. In a very real sense, to be alive is a multi-dimensional act, because so much is happening on so many different levels. They are all levels of one intelligence. In a single moment of life, this intelligence is thinking, feeling, perceiving, breathing, digesting. It is taking in trillions of molecules of food and air and turning them into that mysteriously unique creation called you. At the most subtle level, your inner intelligence is also steadily progressing along the corridors of eternity, although that process is more deeply hidden than the others. Underlying all this bewildering complex activity is one theme, the constant expression of your own needs and desires. Being in touch with your needs is the most powerful way to be in touch with where your inner intelligence is heading at this very moment. This attentiveness makes you a conscious person, someone who is growing and evolving along lines no one else will exactly duplicate, not even the greatest of masters. In Emerson's famous phrase, you are here to enjoy an original relationship to the universe. To be in touch with yourself requires great sensitivity to everything that's going on here and now. The spiritual needs we all have for love, compassion, meaningfulness, total acceptance, devotion, and inner peace are not grand goals to be achieved in a distant time and place. They exist here and now. Spiritual input does not come from another dimension. Your own desires are just manifesting on a subtler level. Compassion is subtler than vitamin C, but both are real needs. And just as the body knows how to process vitamin C and send it where it is required, the inner intelligence of every cell has a profound knowledge of where to find spiritual sustenance and how to use it. Whatever your past conditioning says, your body knows a spiritual deficiency when it feels one. This is because the body wants to be in balance. That is its most profound instinct. Any imbalance can be traced to a state of lack. To live without love, devotion, compassion, or any other spiritual value creates a state of such severe imbalance that every cell yearns to correct it. Ultimately, that is what lies behind the onset of disease. The body is sending a message that some lack is present. An imbalance existing somewhere in inner space that you cannot see or touch has given rise to highly visible, unarguably physical symptoms. Sickness and disease is a change in awareness from comfort to discomfort. Awareness has deviated from its self-referral path of happiness, from its self-referral path of bliss. And that is usually due to a frustrated impulse of intelligence, a frustrated desire that cannot be easily fulfilled or accomplished and gets locked somewhere in your quantum mechanical body, changing that experience of the body from comfort to discomfort, dis-ease. Sickness, therefore, is a self-correcting, cybernetic feedback mechanism to allow you to get on the path of bliss, happiness, and the spontaneous fulfillment of all your desires. In order to prevent disease at the most profound level, one does not have to go to any great lengths. The key is to allow your awareness to be present with the body and pay attention to its signals. A gentle focus of attention is all it takes to free the body of minor imbalances. If you are able, shut your eyes right now and sit quietly. What do you notice? Without effort on your part, you'll begin to sense some physical sensation, a twinge in a sore joint, aching in your feet, tight neck muscles. Any source of discomfort acts as a signal of imbalance, and your natural response is to pay attention. Ignoring pain and discomfort imposes a strain because it takes effort to keep your awareness from going where it wants to. Why do we ignore the body's signals? Fear is the most basic reason. A minor pain makes us afraid because we jump to horrible conclusions. And in that instant of fear, as we cringe and draw back, we are letting fear deprive us of a natural response to something the body is trying to say. Where is this minor discomfort actually heading? We never find out because we have all been indoctrinated to feel massive distrust of the body. We automatically identify it with pain and suffering. Yet, if we stand back and ignore all that old conditioning, it becomes clear that pain is not the same as suffering. Suffering is a mental event, an interpretation we put upon the signal of pain. In and of itself, pain is neutral. A marathon runner does not consider the pain in his chest, however painful it becomes, a form of suffering, while a post-operative patient who has just received a bypass graft may be terrified of chest pain, which is even much milder. In labor, a mother willingly goes through pain without identifying it with suffering. Quite the contrary, she will most likely identify it with the joy of childbirth, and that gives her the strength to accept the pain without judgment. Learning to untangle pain from suffering is only the beginning. Once you realize that you have control over any interpretation you place on your body, an enormously liberating idea begins to dawn. The body is on your side. Its signals are messages from a friend, and far from being threatening, these signals are either asking for help or offering it. Shut your eyes again and allow your awareness to wander where it will. The sensations that you start to feel, let's say it's coming from a tight neck muscle, are asking for healing. The fact that you are paying attention to a sensation is what brings the healing. The mind is answering the body's request. That famous phrase, the inner healer, is nothing but this, the natural response of your inner intelligence to a request for help. A friend to a friend, one part of you is joining with another in compassion. Yet there is more than compassion at work, for the act of paying attention contains tremendous power. Think of a crying child who turns peaceful and happy as soon as its mother pays attention to it. The same response occurs in the body. Any cell, tissue, or organ is capable of crying for attention, and when you give it some, the healing process begins. Our society has ignored this fundamental process and paid a high price for it. We have created an overwhelmingly wasteful, expensive, frightening, and inhuman medical system based on the myth that healing belongs in the hands of professionals. We have ignored our own power to heal, becoming blind to the subtle signals of discomfort and imbalance inside our bodies, so that we finally have no choice but to take the advanced cancer or the blocked coronary artery to a specialist. Healing is a conscious activity, and in order to reclaim your inner healer, you must go about it consciously. The task begins with simple awareness. Sit and be aware of yourself. If possible, do this right now. Let your attention go where it wants. Turn off your tape player and spend a minute or two at this right now. I'm sure you noticed that a minute of conscious attention seems like a long time. In addition, your mind probably went just not to one place in your body, but to several. And in between physical sensations, you were no doubt distracted by thoughts and emotions. These two are part of the healing process, because bodily signals naturally blend into and become part of mental signals. A hurt shoulder can remind you of a hurtful thought. It could also lead to reveries that help dispel the hurt. Anything is possible and anything works because it is all attention. But there is one thing especially that I'd like you to notice. So close your eyes again and without making a special effort, let the sensations come and go, seeing them as clouds passing across the sky. Don't stay with any one particular cloud. Just let your thoughts, feelings, and sensations come and go as they will. Now, as you do this, see if you can become gently aware of the sky, the background against which these clouds are flowing. That is, gently notice the uninvolved witness, the seer who is observing all that is happening inside of you. You see, when you start watching your thoughts or your mind, then you become aware of yourself as not the mind, but the watcher. As you watch the mind, you become aware of yourself as the watcher. All right, pause the tape now, close your eyes, and practice this procedure if you're able to. The purpose of this exercise is to let you see, however briefly, that you are not your thoughts. You are the witness, the observer. As the clouds pass by, the sky is unchanged. As sensations pass through the mind, you are unchanged. Like a movie screen, your awareness gets constantly bombarded with thousands of images. But that does not mean that you must be attached to those images. Is the screen attached to the movie? Of course, we all get caught. We all get attached because those images inside us are our movie. The drama affects us deeply. Even so, the healing mind is the part of yourself that does not get so involved. To understand this more fully, we need to explore the various layers of impulses as they come into the mind and get converted into the body. By doing this, we empower ourselves to heal ourselves and to live a life without limitations. The fact that you notice a thought does not mean you are watching it being born. Far from it. Thoughts are born deep in the unconscious mind, and the level at which you happen to notice them changes all the time. If you are absorbed in your work, you can ignore a headache for hours. If fear of failure is too threatening to be faced, you can suppress it for years. If you think that getting angry at those you love is wrong, you can convince yourself that you actually have no anger in you. Awareness can be endlessly manipulated because you have so much power over it. However, if inner intelligence is allowed to flow without being manipulated, it moves from subtle to gross. This means that every impulse begins in the silent depths of the mind, moves up through levels of thought, emotion, and feeling, and finally emerges as an expression on the physical level. Being alive, which we called a multidimensional act, is like a wave pulsing upward from the invisible to the visible, from a region the senses cannot register to one that they can. The closer you can get to that invisible source, the greater your healing power. What this translates into, in practical terms, is very simple. A quiet mind is all you need. By far, the most powerful way to discover the quiet mind is through meditation, using the process of transcending. Transcending is the mind's own way of unfolding to itself. Any value of inner silence is valuable. The deepest silence contains the most powerful form of awareness. As it is allowed to expand, silent awareness seeks out the old wounds and begins to mend them. The important principle here is that the subtler one's awareness, the more powerfully it can heal. Healing takes place when the mind and consciousness are silent. How does a fertilized ovum become a fully formed baby with all these organs and a heart and a brain and a liver and a skeleton? In the quietness of awareness. It's not thinking to itself, you know, should I make a liver, should I do this? And the mind is completely quiet. Nature functions through silent efficiency. This is called the principle of least action and maximum effectiveness. Look at it in nature. What do we see? We hardly see any effort. Do you see any effort in birds migrating from one part of the world to another? Or in the earth spinning on its own axis with the precision and accuracy that will confound any computer? Or the earth hurtling through outer space at thousands of miles an hour? Or the orchestration of the blooming of flowers with the onset of spring? And all the activity in nature, the government of nature, is silent, completely silent. And it involves the principle of least effort. Do less, accomplish more. Ultimately, do nothing and you'll accomplish everything. The higher self is that place where everything is accomplished by doing nothing. A mere desire becomes the trigger for transformation. When the mind is silent and quiet, then inner energies wake up and work miracles on your behalf without any conscious effort on your part. Again, this brings us face to face with a cultural bias. We were all raised to believe that we have to work for what we want, that the harder we work, the greater the rewards. However, there are some things that require no work, and healing is one of them. You don't have to work to achieve a silent mind. You don't have to work to let your attention flow freely. You don't have to work to find the old wounds. All these things are a given once they are uncovered. The uncovering begins wherever you are now, but its goal is always the same, the revelation of wholeness that unites body, mind, and spirit as one. When you close your eyes and go within, you cannot help but start where you are. The sensations that come to your mind are totally yours, totally unique. Perhaps you do not fully trust where you're going as your mind begins to unfold to itself, but trust builds up over time. Be easy with yourself, and the rest will unfold as it should. Once you start paying attention to your body and letting it express its needs, things will start to change. One has to be a little vague here because no two people are alike, and therefore the process of coming back into balance cannot be mapped out in advance. Realize that your body is a printout of extremely variable information. You're constantly projecting your old conditioning, your beliefs and self-images from the past. Through this filter comes your present awareness, your present thoughts, feelings and emotions, in all their incredible variety. At deeper levels, your subconscious is trying to rid itself of old charged emotions while expressing other basic instincts. And since much of this material contains things you fear and dislike, your mind is constantly interpreting to itself, turning bad into good, or at least tolerable. Some pain is so deep, however, that it cannot be faced at all. It goes into that vast no man's land of denial. Even so, your body is printing out everything, moment by moment. If all the bad things, the fears and old conditioning, and all these suppressed instincts and denied emotions had the upper hand, you would have a hard time living a healthy moment. However, life is not predominantly fearful. It is intelligent, conscious, and full of joy. So is your body. Although islands of pain and discomfort exist in it, they are surrounded by an ocean of pure joy, of comfort, of bliss. When you trace any living impulse back to its source, this bliss is what you reach. We all live our lives from the top down. That is, we notice the grossest expression first. The outburst of anger, the bags under the eyes, the depressed mood. Only then do we undertake an investigation into the subtler causes for these problems, if we seek them at all. Nature works in reverse, from subtle to gross. To nature, your body is bliss first and foremost, a joyful creation whose intent is to live forever. Know that as yourself, and you will exist in a different world. As the ancient Indian sages proclaimed, from bliss these creatures emerged, in bliss they are sustained, into bliss they will merge again. This truth does not dawn all at once. There's a process of purifying the old conditioning that comes first. As each impurity is released, an overall transformation takes place. The body's intelligence regroups itself. It literally recreates itself around a new and purer image. All of us experience this whenever we recover from an illness. The moment comes when the feeling of being sick, accompanied by various symptoms, by fatigue and usually depression, and by a certain inertia in the mind and body, gives way to being well again. I'm a new person, you say, and you're right. Your body is printing out a new creation that is healthy instead of sick. As spiritual growth proceeds, these transformations take place every day. As inner intelligence flows to where it is needed, impurities are released in the form of old stresses. As they go, the entire printout changes. You automatically become integrated on a higher plane of functioning. On some days, you will feel surges of growth. Joyful moods begin to emerge. Former fears and inhibitions vanish, or at least partially melt away. Unexpected strengths seem to be in place. Most astonishing of all, you find that you know things that you never knew before. What you're really doing is tapping into your own informational fields and eavesdropping on the cosmic computer. On the cosmic mind. See, people who are intuitive, they don't go out there to be intuitive. They go inside themselves. Because our bodies are focal points in a universal field of intelligence. So when we get in touch with that finest feeling, that finest level of feeling, that faintest emotion, that finest impulse of desire, we're tapping into an information field. We tap into that information field, we eavesdrop on the cosmic mind. This is the basis of intuition, of precognition, of knowledge that the seers arrived at even thousands of years ago, which is now being substantiated by modern science. I don't mean necessarily that this knowledge is in the form of technical information, although even that can happen. This knowledge comes in the form of insight. You begin to see what makes other people tick. Your own hidden motivations reveal themselves. Old fears appear in a new, less threatening light. The growth of insight tells you that purification is taking place, not just in the mind, but in every cell. There are times when this process of purification and integration is not so noticeable. people who consider themselves on the spiritual path can be shocked when they have a sudden outburst of anger. Contracting a serious illness can fill them with deep doubts. Such things aren't supposed to happen to spiritual people, and yet sometimes they do. Perfection is a real possibility for everyone, but the way to reach it is by letting go of imperfection. In that letting go, there are bumpy moments and major crises. They are crises of growth. All of us have different levels of trust in the process. Fortunately, the process builds trust as it goes forward by itself. We metabolize our experiences and we convert them into the body. You and I are different because we've walked through different gardens and knelt at different graves. Every little experience, every little wisp of experience that has come our way, we have metabolized it and made it into our body. And as we now go into higher states of awareness, we metabolize those experiences too. They also store the knowledge of higher realities, complete and formed, and they are ready for you to unfold them. Be easy with yourself. And know that you are growing all the time. Your body knows how to purify itself. It contains everything you need to recreate yourself into a new being day by day. In truth, you have been doing that all along. Now the process has become conscious. So awareness is the key. You are repairing the leaks in your little boat, and soon it will be strong enough to carry you to the far shores of infinity. Freedom is one of the most important things that we cherish in our life. Our instinct to be free expresses itself everywhere. If you are afraid, your fear cannot be so total that you welcome it. Naturally, you want to be free of fear. If you depend upon others emotionally or financially to the point that you cannot even dare to assert your independence, you can still dream about it. Whatever form it takes, freedom is a fundamental urge. We all want to break away from limitation, from bondage, restriction, and fear. We all want to be our own master. Whether or not we are able to admit it to ourselves, we exist in order to actualize the deepest desires of our heart. So freedom is closely connected to making our desires come true. Every time you have a desire come true, some part of you realizes it did not have to live in limitation. If you ask for a promotion and get it, the fear of asking dissolves. Between the desire and its fulfillment, there existed a boundary. And by actualizing the desire, you cause the boundary to disappear. The same boundary may come back again. One may crave more affection, more money, more prestige tomorrow, even though you satisfied the same desire today. This indicates that our desires are not simple, not unattached. Everyone is caught in the complexity of his desire nature. If we could unravel these complications, we'd see that our desires are trying to free us from all limitation. So let's begin by trying to see how we can free our desire nature and not be so complicated about what we want. People are very concerned about how much to give and how much to expect from life. Am I loved enough? Do others love me enough in return? Am I being paid what I'm really worth? How much money do I dare hope for? Although we spend endless hours hoping, scheming, and working to achieve our desires, the whole enterprise falls very short of what nature intended for us. Nature wants to give us everything. That means infinite fulfillment. All that your heart desires, and then more, for for you are desiring from a heart that has much more room for expansion. Presently, your awareness cannot absorb the concept of having everything. It immediately transforms such a preposterous statement into a reduced version, such as, "Don't bother about everything, I'd be happy with a new Jaguar, or $3 million, or a beautiful wife." As the mind shrinks to its level of acceptance, what is it doing? First of all, it is bouncing back to its own level of awareness. If you have $5,000 instead of $5 million, that reflects your general level of awareness. Secondly, when the mind rejects the possibility of having everything, it expresses its doubts. "Why should I believe in you?" the mind says, and it has no choice but to doubt, for doubts form the chief boundary that encloses us within our narrow consciousness. If the mind could expand beyond its doubt and self-limitation, it would see that having everything does not mean that every kind of material success comes your way, although that possibility should not be ruled out either. Having everything is just an expression of complete inner freedom. When you are completely free of boundaries, you don't have to have a huge number of material things. You already own something far more precious. You own yourself. You see yourself as someone who accepts everything, therefore you have everything. This is not just a play upon words. If the new BMW, the $3 million, the beautiful wife are true desires in your heart, nature will not deny them to you. Above all, nature wants you to have everything. But the all-important point is that having everything happens in consciousness, not in the outside world. Someone who owns absolutely nothing can still have it all inside. When the desire nature is completely set free, the main thing that happens is that your status, the way you see yourself, changes profoundly. Instead of seeing yourself in the world, you truly do see the world in you. You are the co-creator of the world, a position you share with the highest universal intelligence that we refer to as God. Your individual role is to manifest the things you desire from life. As you attain them, your sense of being a creator steadily enlarges until you realize that everything is available to you. This is the state of total freedom. Telling yourself that you have complete free will, that all possibilities are open to you at every second, that no power is greater than yourself, will not bring freedom. These are all true statements, but they are true at a level of consciousness that has to be attained in reality. Presently, if you have a certain limitation, it seems quite real. If you try to wish it away, it inevitably reappears. Seen from the perspective of your higher self, all fears are unnatural. But there is no substitute for proving it to yourself. If you are poor and someone gives you money, you will not automatically be released from the mindset, which is the conditioned consciousness that created your poverty. But if you earn the money yourself in a fashion that increases your self-awareness, the belief that tied you to poverty will be weakened. One step has been taken in the unfolding path that leads to freedom. The end of this path will come when you have fully absorbed the awareness that you are free. It's a very natural feeling. Being free brings a lightness, a carefree surrender to all that is happening around you, and above all, an acceptance of reality. What is simply what is. You allow it, and you rejoice in it. The ancient rishis called this unrestricted state of awareness Brahmi Chetna, or unity consciousness, and they declared that it was the goal towards which all other states of consciousness are evolving. Anyone who has a speck of self-awareness is heading, however haltingly, towards unity. The difference between me, a man who lives an ordinary waking state of consciousness, and someone who has attained unity is that I see the world dominated by differences. Billions of separate fragments cluster together to form my reality. A man in unity sees these fragments too, but underneath them he perceives wholeness. To him, the world with all its diversity is just one thing. A world made up of only one thing sounds strange, but the rishis found it glorious, because what they beheld in all directions was their own awareness. Creation became a mirror showing them to themselves. The objects seen by the eye were no longer made of inert matter. They breathed with life. Their being flowed seamlessly into the rishi's own. Although usually invisible, this living consciousness could shine forth at times, making a table or tree seem to glow from within and filling the air with a shower of golden sparkles. Visible or invisible, a world suffused with awareness becomes indescribably intimate to a person in unity. There are no separations anymore. Without stretching out a hand, one can feel the texture of a distant wall. The heave of the earth as it turns on its axis can be felt under one's feet. Even touching a star becomes a direct, sensuous experience. Since everything is made of consciousness alone, the Upanishads jubilantly declare, there is nothing in creation that is not myself. The mind's shift into unity is as radical as the change from waking to sleeping, or sleeping to dreaming. In words, I can barely suggest what happens, but imagine a British explorer brewing a cup of tea in the Arctic. One thing, the molecule H2O surrounds him on all sides, in the form of his ice floe, the snow covering it, the Arctic Ocean over the horizon, the clouds above, the boiling water in his kettle, and the steam rising from it. Even the explorer's body is two-thirds water. The eye alone could not reveal this unity. It takes a specific state of awareness, one that has been educated in the basic principles of physics, to experience so many different things, by turns hard, soft, cold, hot, white, blue, invisible, visible, moving, and still, as transformations of one fundamental substance. Because of what he knows, the explorer can manipulate part of reality. He can make ice into water, or water into steam, and so on. The state of unity goes one better. Any aspect of reality can be changed, not by manipulating molecules or atoms, but by manipulating the fundamental layer of awareness that ties all of nature together. By a simple but breathtaking stroke, if I can change my consciousness, and if the world is made of the same stuff as my mind, then I can change the world. We are speaking here of a natural unfoldment of the mind's deeper layers. This is experienced as a continually unfolding path. The path is not set out beforehand because every experience brings the next one into view. The path is nowhere out there, but only in here, at the subtle level of the mind where I'm seeing myself. Indeed, there isn't really any path at all, because to have a path, you have to have a space for it. And the relationship between me and myself is far too close to leave any room for a path. Yet the mind creates the path, just because it has created boundaries. The path exists so that the mind can convince itself that these boundaries are unreal, that they have nothing to do with the real me. So following the unfolding path is the same as getting real. In meditation, I can contact one level of reality and experience it without boundaries. This is the level of being where I see myself as pure, silent awareness. But as soon as I open my eyes and start thinking and acting, my being recedes into the shadows. Wholeness is replaced by separation. Oneness gets shattered into a billion little bits. Wholeness is never a thought or action, but the potential to do and think. The rishis claim that wrapped up inside us is the capacity to command every force of nature, to influence every atom in the universe. The basis for this claim is not that we are going to acquire the power to control wholeness, rather, we are wholeness. As Maharshi has said, when you get to the point that unity is a real possibility, the knowledge of attaining it is not something you learn. It's something you become. You forge a connection with all things with such intimacy that their breath is your breath, their life is your life. The South African writer Lawrence Vanderpost recalled a day when he was traveling among the natives in the bush country. He came to their camp and found the men sitting around an old tribesman whom Vanderpost particularly liked. The old man was sitting still with his eyes closed, deeply absorbed. When Vanderpost asked what he was doing, one of the onlookers said, "Shh, he's doing something important. He's making clouds." The rishis say that you and I were born to be cloud makers too. But until we can regain control of our inner nature, we will never solve the terrible imbalances that have been inflicted on nature as a whole. The man in unity who sees himself at the center of nature is not indulging in a fantasy. He has risen to a level of awareness where this connection is a living reality. And the undreamed of power that pours through that connection is just as real. How then do we create the shift in awareness that brings about freedom, fulfillment, and power? Our present state of awareness is the real obstacle, for it keeps us convinced that we are small and helpless. One person appears insignificant compared to the might of natural forces. An all-powerful and merciless environment does not care for our individual fate. Terrible things happen seemingly at random to people who do not deserve them, and everyone feels swept along by circumstances beyond their control. To accept such a reality is the most crippling kind of ignorance, according to the rishis, because it fulfills its own prophecies. If you are unaware of Einstein's general theory of relativity, your ignorance will not change relativity one jot. But if you are ignorant about your self will shrink to fit your conception. For any person engaged in strong denials of pain and anger, the picture of reality presented to him will be twice as convincing, because whenever he makes a move to release his pain, it will hurt, and escaping hurt is his whole reason for denying it in the first place. Ignorance is the most circular of circular traps. Fortunately, inner awareness is the source of all healing. It is the sense of being, of I am, which no one can ever finally sacrifice or destroy. Only a man in unity sees his being in all directions, but we each have a seed of being inside, which is the starting point of our evolution. We've already seen that desire can lead us into several dangerous traps, such as addiction, guilt, compulsive behavior, and repression. Desire is made into our enemy whenever we take the natural urge for more and then at the same time try to suppress it or distort it. Therefore, the first step toward freedom is to let desire flow freely. Once we come to terms with the fact that wanting more out of life is completely natural, then something dramatic happens. First, desires begin to match up with real needs. Stripped of all the complexities, a desire is nothing more than an expansion of a need. Reaching for a glass of water fulfills the body's need for rehydration. Earning $1 million can just as naturally fulfill a need to experience a certain range of power or creativity. Any need, from the smallest to the greatest, fits into the scheme of our unfoldment as long as it arises naturally. But what does naturally mean? It means in alignment with your higher self. All desires arise so that you can learn more about the true nature of your higher self. Since your higher self is totally free, totally unbounded, fulfilled, and blissful, natural desires move in that direction. The standard of judgment is inferior. Earning a huge salary can bring nothing but frustration and worry to someone, or it can represent a reflection of increased creativity and self-worth. The money has no real value except as measured from the inside. This implies that the next desire you have is the best one for you at this very time, at this very moment in your life. For your next desire is closest to what you happen to need right now. It may not be exactly in line with your needs. We all entertain fantasies of the perfect mate, the perfect job, the perfect vacation, and so on. When these do not come to us effortlessly and easily, it is because they are not aligned with our higher self, which is reality. They are unreal, and therefore nature does not make them come true. People draw the wrong conclusions when their fantasies do not come true, believing that they are unworthy or unlucky or simply undeserving of good things. You deserve all good things, and they will come to you when your desire nature is put into alignment with nature as a whole. The best way to do that is to live in the present moment. Realize that your desires are coming to you as guidance from your higher self. Respect them as expressions of being, and don't judge that something better has to come along. The best thing that can happen to you is happening right now. Every experience has a lesson to teach. Nothing is lost in the infinite computation of the universe. So right now, everything is as it should be. When things don't seem to go my way, I let go of my idea of how they should be, trusting that I do not see the total picture at this moment, but it's okay. Maybe the timing is not right. Maybe there's a better reason for these desires not to manifest at this moment. Because inherent in having the desire is the mechanics for its fulfillment. It may be the wrong season. Nature is intrinsically abundant, affluent, unbounded, immortal. So there's no reason why we, being part of nature, should not have those qualities. Affluence, unboundedness, abundance, immortality. These are things that the human soul cherishes. The reason sometimes we do not experience that affluence or that abundance is that we do not allow the relaxed flow of awareness to course effortlessly through our physiologies. We get hung up and bent out of shape and stressed, and then that interferes with the spontaneous manifestation of those desires. In order to master anything in this physical universe, we have to relinquish our attachment to the result. And the moment we do that, then the flow of desire spontaneously manifests the result. It's a paradox. If your attention is focused only on the result, then you're no longer in the process. But if you're in the process, then the result is guaranteed. When you contact the higher self, two things happen. One is that your desires do get manifest more easily. Nature supports you, and you have good luck. You have spontaneous right action. So it's easier for you to fulfill your material desires. No question about that. But as time goes by, the quality of your desires also changes. Because once you begin to satisfy your own personal desires, as your cup filleth over, then what happens is that you start wanting to fulfill other people's desires. You start wanting to help nature fulfill its desires. You become a citizen of the field, and then the whole field supports you. The desires become more universal. They're not so personal anymore because the personal ones have already been taken care of. So you desire more and more and more till nothing satisfies you but the whole universe. Nothing satisfies you but divinity itself. Absolute freedom hasn't been reached until absolutely any desire can come true. To understand how that can come about, I'd like to refer to a Sanskrit term used by Maharishi, Ritam Bhara Pragya, which he translates as the mind that knows only the truth. In other words, there is a level of mind where nothing you desire can be wrong, where nothing can be denied to you, because your thought is a thought of nature. This is the level that we should all operate from. It is the simplest and most natural aspect of our awareness, as well as the most cosmic. Rhythm is developed by meditation, coming into intimate relationship with pure consciousness. You can think of rhythm as a thin onion layer of consciousness, lying just outside the region of pure silence. Pure silence contains all desires in unmanifest form. The thin onion layer of rhythm can fulfill all desires because it serves as the interface between your wishes and the absolute consciousness that contains their fulfillment. Let's translate this into practical terms. To go out and work, to earn money, and to buy what you want is in fact a form of rhythm, but a very crude one. To get from your desire to its achievement takes many steps and much effort. Asking someone to carry out your wishes requires less exertion. And if you can get to the point where all you have to do is sit in a chair and think, that is a very good state of fulfillment, a good state of rhythm. But what if you could have the experience of thought and fulfillment completely fused? This is certainly possible, and it occurs in the state of consciousness that takes in all of reality, which is Ritam Bhara Pragya itself. The desire comes, and with it, instant fulfillment. Tapping into full-blown rhythm is not a miracle. It's a specific level of consciousness where every impulse of thought is so powerful that it naturally and effortlessly manifests. If we stop short of rhythm, we will still find some means to make some of our desires come true. These things are never a matter of all or nothing. If one has had even a glimpse of higher states of consciousness, one's desires get fulfilled, but with a time lag. This is enough to give us hope. Our life will be sustained by the steady growth of fulfillment. Eventually, we want to be in a position where time cannot defeat us. If I desire an apple, my rhythm should deliver the taste to my tongue instantaneously. Or if my mastery of rhythm is even greater, an apple should appear in my hand. This would indicate the complete fusion of name and form. The form or reality of the word apple lies in its qualities, taste, smell, texture, and so on. All of these qualities are experienced on the level of consciousness. Therefore, to achieve them all at once is not impossible. To understand how this works, let's consider the experience of meditation. Ritam Bhara Pragya combines the widest awareness with the faintest activity. What experience in meditation comes closest to that? It is the experience of being quiet inside, but yet having some faint thoughts. Everyone who meditates has noticed this experience. It only needs to ripen and deepen so that the full depth of silence remains undisturbed while clarity of thought is absolutely crystalline. Both are required, profound silence and profound clarity. Many people who meditate are already experiencing brief periods when their inner silence is not effaced by having a thought. If we could develop this ability further, thoughts could be consciously entertained at the deepest level of silence. They would no longer be random thoughts, but desires carrying the force of intention. To master rhythm, the randomness of thought in meditation has to be transformed into precision of thought. In that phase of awareness, materialization of thought comes instantly. Some such phenomenon is already happening here and there. As many people who meditate testify, the time lag between having a desire and achieving it is growing shorter and shorter. The same thing is happening among other people, although they are probably not attuned to the fact that they are developing a specific value of their consciousness. But we need to make it happen. As things stand now, the thoughts that arise in us are mostly connected with the release of stress. Therefore, they are actually not our own thoughts, but are imposed on us by past experience. The result of a thought, if it comes about, happens without intention. When you have to take experience as it comes, you are a slave to the past. But when you can make it happen, you are the master of yourself. So we are really speaking of the transformation from slavery to freedom. The difference is enormous, and yet it happens subtly in the domain of inner awareness. Ritam is not a ploy for getting more money or more prestige or more possessions. Developing ritam is not one of those things that ties a person down to localized results. Ritam is total fulfillment. It is certainly true that going for specific things can retard evolution by tying you to boundaries, but enlivening rhythm is the same as enlivening the totality of consciousness. The limitation comes about when you have one isolated goal in mind and forget that the overall development of self-awareness is the real goal. That happens according to systematic, natural, orderly steps. Rising to higher states of awareness is like becoming a king, but even a king has to ask for something in order to get it, and he must ask through proper channels.